This episode is sponsored by Verisk Marketing Solutions. The future of consumer experience requires a deeper data-driven understanding of identity, behavior, and privacy. Join marketing leaders and industry execs at the VIA 2023 Consumer Insights and Experience Summit, September 18th and 19th in Chicago's Fulton Market District. They'll explain how they can future-proof their businesses and do right by their customers with you. Spots are limited. Register now at marketing.verisk.com/via.
What you can do is just resolve it and make sure that it's correct. And therefore, when you have correct information and you know a little bit about them, that's when you can deliver that better personalized message, which we're all trying to get to as marketers.
Hey gang, it's Monday, July 24th. Listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Verisk Marketing Solutions. I'm Marcus. Today's fact: although Beethoven gradually lost his hearing, he continued to compose. So renowned German composer and pianist Ludwig van Beethoven started losing his hearing during his mid-20s, and things got much worse by the time he reached 30. In fact, he composed many of the most famous musical works of all time, such as his Ninth Symphony, after he had become totally deaf, which means that somehow he continued to compose from memory and note vibrations when he was playing and putting together the different instruments, which is just insane. Anyway, today's real topic is a conversation about how the idea of identity is changing between our very own principal analyst and head of our digital advertising media desk, Paul Werner, and Tim Finnegan, director of product marketing at Verisk Marketing Solutions. And then I'll see you folks in the second half for In Other News to discuss the significance of Peacock raising its prices and what the writers and now actors strike means for viewers.
Well, Tim, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Paul. It's great. I'm excited to be on the eMarketer podcast, Behind the Numbers. And just to let you know, I did do a little research. I do know my numbers. So if you want to quiz me on any of them, I'm pretty good, 1 to 100. So
you're going to be sorry you said that, because I'm going to go past 100 and get up close to infinity. But that'll be for the later part of the show, maybe even for outtakes. So we'll see how it goes.
I'm pretty sure the whole podcast is going to be outtakes.
Yep, I think you're probably right on that. So let me just start by asking you to give us the elevator speech on Verisk Marketing Solutions, what you guys are all about, and yeah, we'll take it from there.
Paul, great. Yeah, so my elevator pitch on Verisk Marketing Solutions is pretty simple. We enable brands and platforms to remove the guesswork around three things: segmentation, timing, and messaging. So what we do in a nutshell is that we help brands, platforms complete a picture of their customer and prospects with identity, attributes, and in-market behaviors, ultimately allowing them to personalize interactions to the right person at the right time.
So what's the client profile? What type of clients do you serve?
Paul, great question. I would like to say we can work with anybody, which we can, but you know, it's ultimately all businesses are trying to get to that end consumer. But where we focus on is insurers, consumer finance, some media, mad tech, and some EDU.
So I want to come back to media in a minute, because that's obviously a big focus area for us. And I want to ask you about your work in that space. But can you just tell me a little bit about or maybe give me an example of an application in the insurance or consumer finance space?
So when you think of one of our top markets that we sell to are this insurance and consumer finance and the mortgage industry, one of the things that they struggle with is getting information at the time they need it. So we call it real-time decisions, but ultimately it's just delivering information via an API that they can get information right when they need it. And so let me give you a quick example of it. I don't know, Paul, if you've ever filled out a lead form when you're on a site, like a comparison shopping site, or sure, hey, I need some more information about something. Yep. Well, a lot of times you'll fill out a lead and it could be your right name, right? It could be Paul Verna. I know, is it spelled right? Or I'm supposed to give
a initial that I don't have.
Yeah. Or I'm supposed to give, you know, my phone number or an email, but it's not my real email. It's like my AOL email. So what we're able to do is in real time, get the real information, get that real identity of the person. So, and not saying it's a fake, you know, person that's coming in, but it's like get their real email, get the right, you know, information and actually identify, give some attributes about who that consumer is. So now I'm that mortgage company, I'm that bank, I'm the insurer. That lead coming through has more information. And now I can personalize the messaging. I can make better decisioning on, hey, what do I need to offer this person? So it's really, I mean, it's this incredible process of getting information in real time so you can decision off of it.
So segueing to the media space, which is very close to my coverage area, tell me a little bit about an experience with a customer in that world.
Yeah, absolutely. So a great example is we're working with one of the top media streaming companies, and they came to us because they had this challenge that they had all these millions of first party consumer records. So it's their own customers and their consumers. But when they were kept on buying all these streaming channels, and they had all these different ways to get into their business through these digital access points, they had messy consumer data. So what they weren't able to do is monetize that. So they couldn't tell media agencies or advertisers like, hey, we've got these types of consumers watching our shows, or these are different attributes about them, and this is why you want to reach them. So what we'll do is that we'll help someone with their messy consumer data, you know, in plain language. And then what we do with that data is what we resolve, enrich, and verify. We just make the data better. So that's one example of, you know, working with sort of that media mad tech area.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of media streaming companies, you think of standalone services that are basically distributing their content through an app or maybe a couple of apps. But when you have these aggregators or holding companies that have a lot of different services, then that complexity of the data just gets multiplied. Because, I mean, even with a single service, you have people watching on different devices. You have the big question mark of whether or who's watching in a particular household. So there are just so many unknowns. But then I think you multiply that. And yeah, I would imagine that's a monumental challenge to correlate that data and make it make sense for the ad buyer.
So that reminds me of something, Paul. Such a really good statement is, you know, behind the numbers, when I was getting ready for the podcast, I was like, oh, what are some interesting numbers I could throw out? There's a stat that says 30% of a business's CRM, so their own data, will go bad or deprecate or something will happen to it. So it's ever changing. So you really don't know 100% of your consumers all the time. You know, it's people move, they get married, they change their name. Maybe they come in through different points for your loyalty service or your credit card or, you know, your form fill. And this information is all different. So all we're doing, or what you can do, is just resolve it and make sure that it's correct. And therefore, when you have correct information and you know a little bit about them, that's when you can deliver that better personalized message, which we're all trying to get to as marketers.
Yeah. I've noticed that a lot of streaming services now, they allow you to pause instead of cancel. So when you pause, all of your information is retained, and then, you know, they try to get you back in like 6 months. So that's got to inject even more uncertainty, because like, how do you know if you're the streaming services, whether that person is just, you know, not viewing, or whether they've, you know, fallen off the radar, or like there are just so many things that are hard to know for them. So how do you guys go about corralling all that data together and turning it into something actionable?
Well, that's the million-dollar question as far as sort of the secret sauce and the magic that companies can do and trying to do that. Because when it's all about having, we call it an identity spine or identity graph. It's just having this years and years of information on consumers, but it's just not having it. It's like, well, how do you also do it in a privacy compliant way too? Because, you know, some big things that are coming out right now is that you've got consumer privacy laws that are evolving, you know, by state. You've got deprecation of third-party cookies, whatever that means, you know, that's always changing. But back to the consumer, and that's what you have to think about, is they still want access to information. They still want to have personalized marketing come out to them. But that also requires quality data that's ever current. So going back to deprecation of a CRM, and it needs to be collected responsibly. So to answer your question, you do need the ability to connect that disparate data sources, also while knowing the consumer's permissions, like how they want to be reached. So ultimately, when you look at the future state, is that companies need to be prepared for the unexpected, which is, okay, I need to make sure my consumer data is current. I need to make sure that I understand potentially in-market behavior, and I need to evolve with my consumer regardless of any macroeconomic factors, because if I can better know my consumer, maybe I can get by some of those macroeconomic things that are popping up even recently.
So you talked a little bit about privacy, and yes, I think the fact that it's a state-by-state phenomenon in terms of laws and regulations, and that it's a constantly moving target, that makes it incredibly complex. And you also talked about identifiers going away, which has also been kind of like a long running train that, you know, maybe is getting, if not to its terminus, certainly maybe its last few stations. So those are incredibly, you know, complex topics in terms of marketing. Another one I want to throw at you is AI and generative AI, and how or if that plays into your business and what your thoughts are about how it's going to affect marketing.
That is a great question. And it's here's my little plug for my own Mark Company's podcast. It's called The Marketing Rapport. And I interviewed the CMO of a huge restaurant chain that has let us entertain you restaurants here in Chicago. And we were talking about AI, like, you know, how it affects businesses differently, or not, maybe not affects, but the opportunities are different by maybe industry. And she was telling me, she's like, one of the things that we're using AI for is to do our menus, like write, descriptions of what we're offering. But she's like, the downside of that is that we got to make sure our designers don't think that we're replacing them, or this is a way to supplant them working here. So that's where I really see it for marketing, is can we use it responsibly, or can marketers use it responsibly for more of the messaging? I honestly, that could be a future state. Like, can we use AI to add attributes or identify consumers and all that information? I honestly have no idea where that's going or could go.
Yeah, I mean, I think so many businesses are grappling with those kinds of questions. And my sense is that the answer is yes, but not yet, or yes, but the capabilities will get so much more sophisticated in, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, and that I think you'll be able to use it more productively in your business as part of the identity resolution process or as part of any other part of what you guys do. But yeah, I think we're certainly in early days, but we're all starting to see the capabilities and the downsides.
Isn't that one of the things, I don't know if you see this, or I'm sure you do, as being a digital marketing expert and talking to a ton of people, but whenever you would look at companies, you know, those yearly trends pieces, like what are your 2023 trends? You know, how many years have they said AI? is a trend that's coming.
Yes.
And I don't think anybody really paid attention to it.
Well, it's like the year of mobile. Every year was the year of mobile for like 25 years.
Yeah. So I think it was like 6 months ago. We're like, oh, wait a second. People are really using it. Hey, guys, this is real. So I always love those trends pieces too, because I think it's, digital transformation is always in there, privacy, consumer data, customer experience. It's always the same.
Yeah. So I'll ask you the last real question in quotation marks or in inverted commas, as Marcus might say.
Now that you mentioned Marcus's name,
we can't talk about him behind his back because he's not listening right now.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Could you tell me, because World Cup's coming upon us.
Yep.
Who do you think's a better team to win the Women's World Cup? Do you think it's England or do you think it's Argentina?
I'm definitely going with England on this one. Absolutely. And England might win the whole thing. The U.S. might or others, but, no disrespect to my country women, but Argentina's not going to win it. I'm glad they're in it, but Marcus gets the point on this one.
And you can't be too great.
He can tease me for years that that England and not Argentina won the World Cup if they do it. But knowing England, they'll probably come in second. So the last real question is, any parting thoughts on the current state of identity or what we're going to be facing in identity resolution in the second half of this year or going into next year?
That's a great question. And I think when you think of identity resolution, I'm going to take a step back from there. I think ultimately what you need to do is, how is identity resolution or how is anything going to help me do one of three things or all three things? How am I going to acquire more customers? How am I going to retain them? And how am I going to grow my business? And if you can use identity resolution to do any of that, then you're like, okay, great. I've got a strategy with it. And I think that's what people need when you look in the future is, what's my strategy with it? It can't be an afterthought. Because in my opinion, customer experience, customer whatever, is the most important thing. And if I can make the experience for a consumer or my customer better, I'm going to do it. And I need a better strategy. And I think that's where identity resolution and any, a third-party data company like mine or data company can help a business with their strategy. And it's all about, again, how do I acquire more customers? How do I retain my customers? And how do I grow my customer base? And I need a strategy, and identity resolution is part of that.
Well, we'll come back to you on that because we cover identity resolution. We've been doing two reports a year, and we're just trying to make sense of a changing and very complicated landscape. So thank you for those insights, and thanks for joining us today, Tim.
Thanks, Paul. It was actually awesome being here. So thank you very much.
All right, folks, time for the second half of the show. Paul is sticking around to help me out today. In other news, Peacock's prices are going up. And what do the writers and actors strikes mean for viewers? Story one, Peacock's prices are going up mid-August, notes Richard Lawler of The Verge. He writes that the streaming will get more expensive whether you're on Peacock's cheaper plan, which is going up by $1 a month to $6, or the Premium Plus one, which is getting a $2 a month bump to $12. The service currently has 22 million subscribers. But Paul, the most interesting sentence in this article about Peacock's prices going up is what and why.
Without any question, the most interesting sentence is where it says, it's the first price hike for Peacock. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is that I thought by now that every one of these services had raised prices. I was very surprised that Peacock had only done it the first time.
Yep. Yeah,
because literally I think every other one of them has raised prices repeatedly. And so it's become like Lucy pulling the ball out from Charlie Brown, where, that these services launched as a way to save you money, which I never believed they would. But it's become very clear that they all started their lives at price points that were not going to be sustainable. And the only question is not whether they will raise prices, but how, and, how they're going to time it, how they're going to message it, how they're going to rationalize it. So I guess this is Peacock's moment to join the club.
Yeah. Yeah, the first increase, as Paul said, since Peacock launched in 2020. NBC Universal parent Comcast expects Peacock's losses to peak around $3 billion in 2023 and then steadily improve from there. Story two, the Screen Actors Guild, an American Federation of TV and Radio Artists, has joined the Writers Guild of America on the picket line. But what does that mean for viewers, asks Elisa Wilkinson of Vox. The writers' strike has been going on for a few months now and has largely shut down most productions in New York and LA. But why? Well, writers and actors are concerned over labor rights and also want assurances that artificial intelligence will not take their jobs and are striking against the AMPTP, the American Motion Picture and Television Producers. But Paul, in your opinion, what do the writers and actors' strikes mean for viewers?
Well, for just a little bit of perspective, this is the first time that both those unions have walked out at the same time since 1960.
Wow.
And you could even say it's unprecedented because the world is just so different now that there's really no comparison. In terms of what it means for viewers, that is already becoming clear because you have this, what was supposed to be this great moment in theatrical film distribution this weekend with Oppenheimer and Barbie coming out at the same time. So those movies are going to come out, but all the promotion around them is basically ground to a halt because the actors are not supposed to be promoting their films. I think we also see it with late night TV. It's already paused. But I think what's going to happen next is that some of the scripted series are not going to air on time. So if you're waiting for that next episode of something you've been binging on and you know can't wait to sink your teeth into, you're going to have to wait even longer. And the longer the strike goes on, the more of an impact it's going to have on people's entertainment options.
Yeah. That's what we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much, Paul, for hanging out today.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to Tim, who joined us in the first half. Thank you to John for helping to produce this episode. Scott for editing the show today, because Victoria is away on vacation. James, thank you to him for copy editing the show, and Stuart for running the team. Thank you to everyone for listening in. We'll see you tomorrow, hopefully, for the Behind the Numbers Daily, the eMarketer podcast made possible by Verisk Marketing Solutions.
And thank you to you, Marcus, for hosting and producing and being the voice, the public face, and let's face it, the talent. And luckily, you know, I guess you're not unionized, because if you had to stop writing and acting in this endeavor, we would all be the losers for it. So
you guys will be hearing from my agent. I need better working conditions. I'm kidding.
That's
I love
for
my
sure.
job.
That's for sure.